Morning, morning, morning.
It's the boss.
I call shot like a boss.
In the gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket.
Welcome in, everyone. I am David Gow, and I am sitting next to Carla Dawson. I'm the boss. You are the gloss. How are you?
I am great because we just kicked off week one in the NFL.
Indeed, we
did. We're finishing it up tonight with a good one in the Death Star in Las Vegas between the Raiders and the Ravens.
Oh, you're looking forward to this.
I love that exclamation point at the end of week one.
Well, for those of you who do not know, Carla Dawson, my co-host here, is the Princess of Darkness. She loves her Raiders. And this is a special night because it's the first time the fans will be in that new, gorgeous, big-time Darth Vader facility.
Absolutely, and Derek Carr is 4-2 in Monday Night Football game, so let's see it.
Let's see
what's going to happen. But the Ravens are 10-3 under John Harbaugh for opening night game, so I don't know.
Well, one of your other teams, you are a USC grad, announced today they were firing Clay Helton after really a disappointing, ugly loss to Stanford this weekend. Were you surprised that Helton's getting fired today?
Yes and no. Yes, because of the timing. It's two games in. But no, because it's been brewing for years. I mean, I feel like he came in when Sark got fired, and it just has never been a full embrace by the administration. By the team, yes. But USC has underperformed by all standards, same as Texas alumni feel like UT has been. USC is kind of the same way. So they're not going to be happy until things start looking better, and Clay Helton was the one to go this time.
Well, they underperformed Saturday. That cost them the job. Oh. Might have been the straw that broke the camel's back, to your point.
To a Stanford team that lost horribly to Kansas State the week before.
Well, with week one NFL and all things college football, we will have a lot to unpack today. And when we come back, we're going to, well, let's dive first into the NFL because so much happened in week one. And I want to, when we come back, look at what I think was the biggest surprise of the first Sunday in the NFL. And we'll get your take on the biggest surprise week one in the NFL when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Listening to The Boss
in the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and it is great to be here again after week one in the NFL. And when we look at all the games that happened, I spent some time thinking last night, what was the biggest surprise to me? What really shocked me about yesterday's games? And I actually wrestled with two surprises in the same game. One was the poor performance of Aaron Rodgers, and the other was the outstanding performance of Jameis Winston. I mean, I didn't think either one of them were going to play that way. In fact, I might have, if you had told me before, the stat lines of those two quarterbacks, yep. I would have transposed them.
Exactly.
I would have said Rodgers would throw five touchdown passes, and Winston would throw two interceptions. Yet it went the other way away. Let's talk about Aaron Rodgers first, because this is a guy who had a miserable offseason. It was not a beautiful mystery.
Of his own doing.
Of his own doing. He really did create this trap, right? And you have to wonder, that kind of an offseason, I mean, compare that offseason to what we hear about the legendary Tom Brady and what he does in the offseason. He's always working with his teammates. He's always striving to be better. He's leading activities and training. He's just focused in a single-minded way on becoming a better quarterback the next year. It did not look like Aaron Rodgers had that kind of an offseason.
Well, you know, let's look at Aaron Rodgers' offseason. Where did we see him? We saw him in a man bun under a waterfall in Hawaii with his fiance, maybe now wife, some other people that was like, oh, look where Aaron Rodgers is. You know, and then we see him as a no-show to training camp. But, you know, he's working on the side, whatever. We see him in press conferences. Saying,
not to be lost, hosting Jeopardy, too.
Well, that's
and he was an
right.
excellent host.
Well, exactly. He really was good. So he was everything that we saw from him, I saw nothing regarding football other than the press conferences saying, basically, you know, I've got my teammates back. We don't like what's going on. I'm going to come back. You know, he didn't make that announcement that he was going to be coming back until late in the season.
Yep.
So, you know, my thought is, really, Packers fans, what did you expect? You've got a guy who is not was not dedicated to football at all in the offseason. He was dedicated to ripping the team that he needs to play for, that he's under contract for. And I wonder, is it the man bun? Is it Shailene? I mean, there's some changes with him. And while he is an elite level quarterback, let me just tell you what happens 17 years in when you ignore your offseason. So yesterday, Rodgers' passer rating, okay, was a 36.8.
Ouch.
Let me give you some context.
Yes.
Ouch is correct. Do you know that if you threw the ball out there, David, every other pass you intentionally grounded, just threw it into the dirt, your passer rating would be a 39.6. Mm. His yesterday was a 36.8. So if I'm Green Bay, I'm like, listen, we listened to your garbage all offseason. You threw LaFleur under the bus. You threw Gutekunst under the bus. Did Gutekunst handle things well? Probably not. But look what you just did. You laid an egg with 3 points and possibly the worst game of your entire NFL career to open up our season. I don't care if you're on the road or whatever.
He just looked dazed for the reigning MVP of the National Football League. Just
such
an amazing start for the Packers. And, of course, they were playing a team, the Saints, who were sort of a road team, right? This was supposed to be a home game for the Saints, but they couldn't play at home. Everything was teed up. The Saints hadn't been able to play in their own or practice in their own hometown. The Saints are facing all that adversity, and then the Saints just came in and dominated. And now credit the Saints defense, because that defense looks really good. I mean, Marcus Davenport looks like he is he has fully arrived, and they've got things going on the defensive side of the ball. They signed their cornerback to a big deal, and you got to give some credit to that Saints defense.
Oh, you got to give a lot of credit to it. Look what they did to the Green Bay running game, 43 yards on the ground. And in holding Green Bay to 3 points, which is what they did yesterday, that was the fewest points in an opener for Green Bay in 15 years. Like, these are crazy stats. Like, crazy stats. This should not happen to a reigning MVP. But he's not in it. He's not in it.
All right, so there were these rumors out there. Packers fans were speculating that Aaron Rodgers was tanking in order to force the Packers to finally trade him. I find that hard to believe. I would believe more likely the premise that he really didn't prepare well this offseason with all these distractions. And preparation is required. Even if you're the MVP, you've really got to get yourself ready to play at a high level, especially against a great defense like the Saints. But there is this notion out there that Rodgers doesn't want to play for the Packers. And if he just stinks it up, maybe that'll force their hand to trade him.
Listen, he's a diva. And he is too arrogant to tank. To purposely tank. I think he really was not prepared. He has not had a lot of practice time. And that's got to be super frustrating.
All right, on the other side of the surprise is Winston. Jameis Winston, the miracle worker. Sean Payton has transformed him. He's a 5-touchdown throwing quarterback. He was awesome yesterday. He wasn't eating his fingers. He was fantastic. He was Drew Brees, but with a deep ball. He could do all things.
Wow, that was beautiful. Beautiful day yesterday for him.
What I loved about him were the comments after the game when he said that he really did grow in the past year, that sitting behind Brees and listening to Drew Brees was very important in his development. I mean, one of the things he said was that Brees taught him that the decision about where to throw might be more important than the throw itself. That it was really important to be a good decision maker, and Winston made good decisions yesterday.
Well, and you know, I think the point you bring about, one part of it is right, and one part of it I think is a bit of an excuse, meaning that I think he is better having sat behind Drew Brees, but not just because Drew Brees is brilliant and has years of experience and successful and taught him. I think it's called humble pie. What Jameis Winston has done since he left Tampa Bay, you know, with breaking the NFL record of having 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions in a season, wow, He got LASIK on his eye. He had the eye surgery. I think that does have something to do with
it.
I don't know how much, but it's got to have something as I'm sitting here in glasses today. But also, this guy needed to mature. I mean, good Lord. He was eating his fingers in a huddle in Tampa Bay with his line looking at him like, what is going on? I think
you never understood that.
I never understood it.
Okay, just ask.
Crab legs, the whole situation. He's got too many things going on. So I think the combination of the LASIK, the humbling of being a backup, a true backup for quite a couple years, and also learning from Drew Brees and maturity. Maturity is key. So I think maybe it's all coming together for him.
Well, nice to see that. I mean,
yeah, it is.
He was in a bad spot in Tampa Bay because in that time, in those 5 years, he had three head coaches, three play callers, and, of course, zero playoff appearances that came out of that. But it was a really tough stretch there, and he didn't get the kind of coaching and the kind of environment that he had with the Saints. I mean, and interestingly, one of the things, when he popped out onto the free agent market after his time at Tampa Bay, he could have gone elsewhere and probably made more money, but he took the job to play behind Brees to get trained under Sean Payton. And I think that was a mature decision that may well bear fruit for him. Obviously, if he could play like this on a consistent basis, that will radically change his overall compensation at some point.
I think he is a really smart guy. He is smart, and I think he has lacked maturity. But I think now he made a smart decision, just like you pointed out, and now he's got the maturity to back it up, and he clearly has the talent. And you see in Tampa Bay, when you have a quarterback that commands the locker room, like they do now with Tom Brady, it's all good. When you have a quarterback that is a mess, is a kid, that just trying to thinks he can wing it like he did at Florida State, he was given the reins to do whatever he wanted, and the guy did whatever he wanted. We won't go there. It didn't work. So it didn't matter who your coach was or what. When your signal caller is not really a leader in the locker room, it's going to be tough to have success. So that's where I stand on that one.
Well, just going back to Rodgers before we get a break, it's just amazing to think about this for a minute, is that he really didn't show up well, and the team has to be wondering, is he the Aaron Rodgers that we had last year? And then look what this unleashes. Ian Rappaport today reporting that the Broncos are now keeping a close eye on the Aaron Rodgers situation. So there will be rumors about a potential trade up until that trade deadline, as long as Rodgers continues to struggle. And that's just a fascinating story to watch and see unfold, frankly. All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to talk to Sports Illustrated's Pat Forty. He's, of course, the great college football expert. And I want to ask him the question we're all asking now. Two games in, USC, Clay Helton has been fired. How did it all come to pass? It'll be Pat Forty when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to you curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Now, let's go out to the Progressive Insurance guest line. I promised you, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Pat Forty. Pat, welcome onto the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hi, good to be on with you all.
Well, I was just thinking that the first time I ever met you in person was at a hole-in-the-wall bar with Dan Wetzel in the bowels of the French Quarter in New Orleans. Do you remember?
Oh, I remember very clearly. Yes,
okay,
very
save those. I don't want the details, man.
Yep. We're making Carla nervous with all this talk, but it was all on the up and up.
Yeah. Hey, it was a very glamorous high-level meeting over a couple of Miller Lights to hammer out a radio deal. It was the beginning of an empire, for sure.
Absolutely.
I think it was the word bowels that threw me. I just didn't want to go there.
All right, well, speaking of empire, one empire that seems to be shattered here is USC. Clay Helton, the news today, he's gone. Catch us up. What do you think?
Yeah, pretty startling news here. I mean, he certainly that had the look of a deal-breaking loss for sure to Stanford. I mean, Stanford team that was just inept in its first game and then turns around and pummels USC in the Coliseum, a USC team that on paper looked like it could be, you know, maybe the best in the Pac-12. And, you know, I think you add the pressure of Chip Kelly finally getting UCLA up and running, and you look at Clay Helton, you're like, there's just no hope here that USC is going to get back to being USC with him. And so they decided not only is this season time, but right now is time. And it's pretty startling. We've had two coaches fired after two games this year already.
Right.
Randy Edsall at UConn, and now Clay Helton. And it's pretty shocking, but that's kind of the way college football is right now. Big business, urgent decisions being made.
And Pat, what do you think? Dante Williams is going to take over as the interim head coach, and he will be the first black head coach ever for the Trojans. What do you know about Dante Williams? Is he a placeholder, or is he really going to be the guy?
I think he's a placeholder. I can't say for sure. We'll see how he does as an interim, but it seems very unlikely. I mean, Clay Helton got the job as an interim. It seems unlikely they're going to go back down that track, especially when I think they're going to have more proven quantities. I think Dante Williams is very popular with the players. He's been an extremely effective recruiter. He's a guy that has good relationships with most of those players, and the hope is that he'll get them to play hard and play well for the rest of this year. But my suspicion is that they're going to go for somebody who's been a head coach and won a lot of games at some level before.
I agree, Pat. And, you know, it's the bright lights of L.A. They can't just have some, you know, a random name. Somebody's got to be a big name to return them to what they think they should be playing at. When another school like that, the University of Texas, you know, the expectations are that they're going to win the national championship every year. Should Texas fans now be concerned about their USC leftovers with Sarkisian getting blown out by Arkansas this weekend?
Well, I mean, that was a slap in the face. There's no doubt about it. And the timing of it is pretty incredible, you know, coming very shortly off the heels of this power move to join the SEC, and you go play a team that's probably
right.
Somewhere between 7th and 10th best in that league, and you just get pummeled. It's like, what are y'all doing here? You know, I think it was a very bad look for Texas. Steve Sarkisian on the sidelines looked like he was seeing his future, and his future looked a bit bleak. You know, obviously, you can't just keep recycling coaches over and over and over. You've got to give him a shot at this thing. But the here and now is they've got a long way to go to be ready to compete when they get into the SEC, and probably a long way to go to compete to even be very good in the Big 12 this year.
You know, I agree completely, and I see today that he's moving Casey Thompson in as the quarterback now, but saying both quarterbacks will get play. You know, I had cause for pause last weekend, you know, the opening weekend against the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana, that Longhorn fans were going nuts. This is the new era. Look at them, just blow them out. Well, it's an FCS school. And I thought, well, Arkansas, you know, that shouldn't be too bad. Well, and look what we've got. So really fascinating. Do you think he's doing the right thing changing quarterbacks?
I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's not like Hudson Card had stamped himself as
right.
Irreplaceable. I don't know whether Casey Thompson's going to be the answer, but I think you have to try because mm-hmm. what you've gotten from Hudson Card sure wasn't good enough to beat Arkansas.
No.
So, you try what you've got and see how it works. It may be one of those things where they're switching quarterbacks multiple times this year.
Well, let's shift gear to the Longhorns' old rival, A&M, Texas A&M. Haynes King hurt yesterday, and the offense really sputtered. Have you heard an update on King, and what's the prognosis for the Aggies if King can't return?
Yeah, I mean, he had surgery, so he's clearly not going to be back soon. But I think the hope is that perhaps by midseason, possibly a little bit later than that, he can get back. But, you know, that's asking a lot. They struggled at that position after King went out. But I'll give Calzada credit, who came in there. I mean, he looked for a minute like, just completely deer in the headlights. But eventually he got around to engineering a couple of very nice drives, and they were able to pull out that game. The good news is, I mean, they've got great skill position guys. You know, if he can just get them the ball, running backs, wide receivers, tight end, you've got playmakers there. The offensive line, I think, has to play better. Quarterback has to be at least solid. Defense is very good. You know, they can win a fair amount of games without the quarterback being anything great. But, you know, this was a season that began with aspirations of bringing Alabama into College Station and showing them that they can be beaten. And right now, without Haynes King at quarterback or without some more punch in that offense, that seems like a long shot.
Yeah, indeed it does. We're talking to Pat Forty, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Okay, Ohio State falls to Oregon, and that obviously an upset. What does Ohio State's future look like this season? I mean, it's going to be hard to get into the playoffs for them now, isn't it?
Well, they're definitely fighting upstream. For one thing, if Oregon keeps winning, Oregon's definitely ahead of them. You figure at least one team from the SEC is definitely ahead of them. If an undefeated Oklahoma or somebody like that would be ahead of them. And so you better win the Big Ten, and they can do that, but won't necessarily be easy. And what they've really got to do is shore up their defense. I mean, that was an ugly showing. And if you combine that 35 points to Oregon, 31 to Minnesota, mm-hmm. 52 in the national championship game last year, that's 118 points in their last three games. The last time I looked this up, last time Ohio State gave up 118 points in three consecutive games, 1891.
Ooh.
So that's not too good.
Wow.
So defensive coordinator Kerry Combs is another coach who's feeling a little bit of pressure right now.
Amazing. All right, let's go. Florida State losing to Jacksonville State. How did that happen?
I was watching it live. I was flipping between games, and I settled on that because it was a one-score game, and I thought, well, we'll just see it through to its conclusion.
Yeah.
And Jacksonville State is just making a mess of the last possession. I mean, they can't go anywhere. They're wasting time, dinking and dunking, and you're just thinking, well, this is all but over. There's one play left, and shockingly, Florida State played it like there was six plays left and did not have anywhere near the secondary help that they should have had in position to stop a Hail Mary play. And it was quite frankly an easy touchdown, which just blows my mind. And I think Florida State has fallen very far, very fast in the last three or four years, but this might've been the new rock bottom.
Love to ask you off the field now about the Big 12. They've extended invitations to Houston, Cincinnati, Central Florida, BYU. They're going to join the conference seemingly on the heels of Texas and Oklahoma leaving. What is your take on the Big 12? What is the outlook with those teams joining?
Well, I mean, I think you're making the best of a bad situation. They don't replace Texas and Oklahoma in terms of market value, in terms of prestige, in terms of winning or tradition or any of those things. But it does help stabilize the eight that remain.
Yep.
And, keeps it a pretty viable conference. UCF, I think everybody looks at as a giant, that maybe not a giant, but certainly a growing program that's on its way to really big things. They're located in a great area. They have a humongous enrollment, which means humongous alumni base, which means humongous donations, theoretically. Cincinnati has been extremely good under multiple coaches in the last 10, 15 years. Houston has certainly had its moments and sits in incredible recruiting territory and on a big TV market. BYU, big worldwide fan base, frankly, and 63,000 seat stadium that they fill. So those four bring something to the table for sure. And I think that really this was the best move that the Big 12 could have made. And we'll see if they make additional moves and add more later.
Nobody covers college football like Pat Forty. Pat, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Pat.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
All right, one of the fun things to watch this weekend was the reunion, the battle of the Bama quarterbacks.
That was great.
Tua versus Mac, right? Jones versus Tagovailoa. It was a fun matchup, and two coaches who knew each other very well in Flores and Belichick, of course. Flores used to be a coordinator under Bill Belichick. So the Dolphins and the Patriots, the long history, they meet on the field, and it's a good, good game. It came down to, well, the last drive, pretty much. Yeah, it was a very interesting thing. Yes, that Mac Jones versus Tua, that matchup, clearly to me, I thought Mac Jones looked like a far superior quarterback, even though it was his first start, and Tua here in his second season.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think that while Tua did not lose the game, I mean, for Miami, and he didn't harm them, I think his numbers were pedestrian. 16 of 27 for 202 yards, one touchdown, one interception. That is fine, but it's not going to win you a bunch of games, and it could possibly lose you games. I think, you know, what lost that game is what we said, is the Patriots lost two fumbles. Damian Harris fumbles inside the 10. That stopped the game-winning score right there, which was too bad because it really did rain on a beautiful debut by Mac Jones.
Yeah, it's interesting. In the Boston Globe this morning, the sports page basically said, did the karma of the Patriots leave the building when Tom Brady left the building? Because it looked like there was some
kind of
bad
aura or something.
Yeah, there was some kind of aura, some kind of almost the shamrock luck that the Celtics have had, because they were poised to win that game. And that was a game, if Brady had been on the field, you would have just expected, oh, they'll run down the clock, they'll go in and they'll score. They were inside the 10 when Harris was carrying the ball with about 3 minutes remaining, and then he coughed it up. It was just the inverse of what used to happen in the Brady-led Patriots days.
However, not Brady is a rookie. And so that's what I want to peel it back for. Like, that narrative, yes, you can get caught up in that. However, this is Mac Jones' first NFL game. I mean, he is legit a rookie. And, you know, when you're averaging almost 8 yards an attempt as a rookie against a very good Miami defense, I'm happy if I'm Belichick.
Yep. No, I...
And Mac Jones.
First of all, Mac Jones was the best-looking rookie quarterback yesterday.
He won the weekend.
He certainly looked better than Zach Wilson and better than Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
And Justice Field, we didn't see very much of him.
But he did have a rushing touchdown.
We didn't see much of Trey Lance. But, yes, Mac Jones looked the part.
Yep.
And this was week one. He's going to grow into that. They're going to feed him more opportunities. He slides in the pocket very, very well. He shows a poise in the pocket. He just looks like he's going to emerge into a really good cerebral quarterback. He's not going to be a Lamar Jackson and run off a 40-yard run, but he's going to figure out how to read defenses quickly. He's got great coaching there, and I think the sky's the limit for Mac Jones.
I do too. And you look at who Belichick picked very intentionally at number 15, which is a very high pick for the Patriots. They haven't had that type of a pick since, I mean, early on in the Tom Brady years.
Yep.
And he very much picked the same type of quarterback that Tom Brady is. You don't see Tom Brady's not dual threat. He is an unbelievably smart guy that knows the field well, that quick release. But, I mean, you get him outside of the pocket, he's got cement shoes. So we don't expect from Mac Brown, you know, given Bill Belichick's history of who he picks at quarterback and who he has success with, this is very in line with
right.
What
no,
he likes
the
to work
whole
with.
Offense is predicated on getting the ball out of the quarterback's hands quickly. Taking very few sacks, making very few mistakes, putting the ball into the hands of playmakers. And Mac Jones can play that kind of quarterback role. So it's a really great fit. And you could feel that back on draft day. I think Mac Jones realized he was going to just the right place. He's going to be asked to do the very things that he naturally does well.
Yes.
So that worked out well. I found it so odd. I mean, Skip Bayless.
Oh, goodness.
Sometimes he's just trying to be the loudest voice in the room just to get attention, not to be the most intelligent, not the most insightful, just the loudest. And his comments yesterday just was one of those head scratchers again, where Skip Bayless, after the game, I bet he didn't even watch the game. He just said, if Cam Newton had been quarterback, the Patriots would have scored more than 16 points.
Clickbait.
Clickbait. That's all he's doing there. I mean, look, The Patriots would have scored more points, but there were two fumbles, and they weren't Mac Jones' fault.
That's right.
And they were on their way to the game-winning score. So it's just preposterous that he would raise that specter and suggest that Cam would have been anything different and would have changed the game. I just don't think that's fair. That's Bayless being loud.
Being Bayless.
Yes. But Cam Newton, interestingly, was in the news. Well, he's been in the news most of the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
First was, of course, the news of his release from the Patriots. And then he did the big sit-down interview with his father. And all those provocative quotes came out over where he's saying that he's one of the best 32 quarterbacks in the league, that he has an aura about him that
makes it hard
for him to sit behind or have Mac Jones have him sit behind him. And just that loud presence, I think it really is the one thing that's going to keep Cam Newton from getting a backup job. Look, will somebody sign him as injuries happen? Quite possibly. But I don't know that I want that kind of loud presence, that vocal presence as the backup on my team. I just think it's a distraction for the team, and I think the Patriots made the right decision in cutting him. They got Brian Hoyer as a perfect backup role, as a guy who can step in for a couple games and do fine, and Hoyer will be the complimentary coaching backup, not the flamboyant backup that Cam Newton can be.
Well, you know, that I agree with you, and I agree that Cam Newton, you know, what he said, though, is that I'm happy to be a backup to Mac Jones. Mac Jones wasn't comfortable having me be a backup to him. And, you know, you can see why. Look at the difference in the personalities. Mac Jones is just, he's smart, he's reserved, he's dialed in, and then you've got just the personality you described with Cam Newton. So he's saying, I would have been happy to be a backup. And I think he now...
I know, but look what he just did with that. What he just said is, the problem isn't me.
Yes.
The problem was Mac Jones.
Exactly. No, 100%.
I could have done it, but Mac Jones couldn't have handled me. That's the guy you don't want on your team. I mean, listen to his quote. He said, I was going to be a distraction without being the starter. It's just my aura. That's my gift. That's my curse. That's not the voice of a backup quarterback.
No, and it's not the Patriot way either.
Yep.
But let's also peel back a few little layers here and get to what one of the main reasons I believe he was cut or released, and Bill Belichick's not going to say it. Why? Because he's smart. Cam Newton is not vaccinated. It's public knowledge. No, you know, I mean, that sounds silly and dumb, but you know what Bill Belichick needs as a head coach? Consistency. And where do you need consistency? Well, pretty much everywhere in a football team, but definitely under center. You have got to be able to count on your guy, your person that you have as QB number one, to be there every week and not be stuck in COVID protocols or getting protocol. You can't say that you released someone because they are not vaccinated, because we've got the NFLPA. And Urban Meyer saw that, oops, I shouldn't have said that, but Urban Meyer is a rookie NFL coach. Bill Belichick is the gold standard, and he's not going to say something like that. So honestly, I think Cam Newton would have been a cheap, perfect backup. He's much more talented than Brian Hoyer. There is the personality issue that is a real deal that you brought up that affects Mac Jones as well as Bill Belichick, as well as the locker room. But let's be real. The guy's not vaccinated. And he does not have what looks to me as a serene lifestyle.
Okay.
So get himself into
you're just
trouble.
Basing that on his dress code, right?
Just his aunt? Yeah. Well, not on his dress code. He doesn't seem like someone who's going to sit around and wear a mask and not be in a crowd.
No, well, and I guess my quick comment on that, which is a little bit flippant, is the way he dresses, it looks like he's always going out to a nightclub somewhere.
Oh, well, that's true.
He doesn't look like he's dressing just to sit at home, right?
No.
All right, but going back to Cam Newton now that he is trying to get onto the field, getting back on the field, the Washington football team, of course, they suffer this loss to Fitzpatrick, Fitzmagic. He's got a hip injury. And now the starting quarterback of
Taylor Heineke.
And this is not as they scripted things. I mean, Fitzgerald is an above average quarterback.
Fitzpatrick,
yes. Thank you. It's Fitzmagic to me.
Yes,
but
exactly.
Now they've got Heineke. And they may well look at Cam Newton. Obviously, Ron Rivera knows Newton intimately well from their days together at the Panthers. Do you see
which may keep Ojabo away from?
Well, that's right. And so Rivera knows whether the aura of Cam Newton would be too much to put into a backup role. I mean, can you believe that Cam Newton's ego, when he's saying I'm one of the 32 best quarterbacks in the league, that Cam Newton would be satisfied sitting behind Heinicke?
Oh, not a chance. Not a chance that he would be satisfied with that. But I think it wouldn't be sitting behind Taylor Heinicke. I mean, you look at I think what you have to look at first is Ryan Fitzpatrick's situation, which is not good. I mean, this injury is serious.
Yep.
And so he's on IR, which means minimum of 3 games. He wouldn't come back till October 10th against New Orleans. That's a long time away. You know, and then you add the fact that he's 38 years old. And you and I both know, because we're 39, that at 38, it's very difficult to come back from injuries quickly like these young guns can. Taylor Heinicke's road has been so interesting, you know, from Old Dominion to the Vikings to getting cut to being in grad school, being called out of grad school to back up last year when they got rid of Dwayne Haskins. So there's not a lot of film on Taylor Heinicke. So I think Ron Rivera is probably going – As you noted, he has incredible intel on Cam Newton. And from, you know, all what we see, it looks like that relationship is fine. But Ron Rivera is a tough cookie, and he has expectations, and as he should. So if he doesn't bring in Cam Newton, if Heinicke struggles and doesn't bring in Cam Newton, then we know exactly why Cam Newton's not on an NFL team right now. Because, I mean, he is better than Daniel Jones. He is better – certain quarterbacks, Josh Rosen. I mean, come on. He's probably better than Sam Darnold. I hate to say that.
Well, of course, Rosen not starting for a team, but Daniel Jones is. And, well, I guess I might have, up until last week, I might have said Cam Newton's better than Tyrod Taylor. But all of a sudden, Tyrod Taylor's on fire.
Well, hold on. Those Jacksonville Jaguars that we saw yesterday could make you and me look good behind center, okay? So I think... Like, I'm happy for Tyrod Taylor, 11-year NFL vet. It's time for him to get a chance.
It was great to see him get a chance.
Great.
It always seemed he was the guy who was being supplanted by a number one pick.
Because of circumstances beyond his control. I mean, the poor guy. But I would not base anything off of a contest with this Jacksonville Jaguars, who have a rookie head coach who's made plenty of mistakes already, even before game day, trying to bring up a rookie quarterback with a line, an offensive line that is in flux. I mean, so don't get too excited, Texans fans. It was the Jaguars.
Well, we'll get back to the first place Texans in another segment.
Tyrod Taylor, for sure.
First place Texans, Tyrod Taylor, David Culley
first
on their way.
Texans, I love it.
Just don't lose track of where they stand right now.
That's right.
All right, when we come back, if you haven't seen it, the Washington football team is down to 8 final names for the new nickname of the team. And we're going to ask Carla Dawson, the Gloss, what she thinks of these 8 names. What would be her pick? We'll take a look at that when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and everybody knows that my co-host here, Carla Dawson, is called the Gloss because she understands style and appearance and looks, good looks, fashion sense, all those kinds of things. Now, you've come in today as Southwest Carla. You've just flown in on Southwest Airlines.
not looking as glossy as I would prefer.
Maybe not your normal high level of gloss.
Gotta love radio.
We've got to come up with the best glossy name for the Washington football team. And I'm going to give you the list of names.
All right, bring it on.
That are the 8 finalists. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
The Armada, the Washington Presidents, the Washington Brigade, the Washington Red Hawks, Commanders, Red Wolves, Defenders, or just keep them as the WFT.
WFT has to go because it's too close to WTF.
Yeah, but that's so why I like it, as a matter of fact.
I know, it does kind of work, doesn't
okay.
it? Okay, my pick, there's not even a question.
Mm.
It's Armada.
The Armada?
Look how it just rolled off your tongue right there.
Yes.
Armada.
Armada.
That's a cool name. And you know what it means?
Tell me.
It's a fleet of warships.
Yes.
So that, to me, fleet says team, warship. I mean, you're going to war
They're
every
going
Sunday.
To battle.
I love that. Armada is... It's got a cool, it flows well. It's going to appeal to all kind of fan bases, and you're going to war every Sunday.
It's interesting because I do know a history of the Spanish Armada and all that. I just didn't see the connection to Washington. I mean, obviously, if you want the Washington Presidents, I mean, that is where the president lives, or the Washington Commanders, that's the home D.C. is of the power center, all these commanders. But Armada, okay.
Because Armada is not divisive.
Yeah.
If you have the presidents, what isn't divisive about
we're
presidents?
In an era
you either love one, you hate the other, whatever it is.
Yeah, you don't like one of the – either way, you don't like
that's
the president.
Right.
Okay.
So I say you stay away from that at all costs.
All right. I sort of liked the Red Hawks. I mean, it keeps the red in there because they've got a history. The colors are going to be what the colors are going to be, which is the red. And Hawks, they're great. They're a fierce bird.
Yeah, you've got Seahawks, though,
that's
and you've
true.
Got Falcons. Those are both red birds. And Cardinals. Too many red birds.
All right. You know what the number one fan favorite is?
I fear this.
No, don't fear. The Washington Red Wolves. They like the Wolves. The Red Wolves.
Wolves? I like something with wolves. Red Wolves is a little bizarre.
Yeah, I've never heard of a Red Wolf. Is there such thing as a Red Wolf?
Well, there might be. We have to stay tuned.
All right. You've been listening to the Boston The Gloss, hour number one in the books. When we come back, we're going to hear an extraordinary story about a woman who married herself. That up next on the Sports Map Radio Network.